From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The controversial president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, gave his annual State of the Nation speech on Monday, remaining defiant in the face of mass protests against his oversight of a deadly drug war that has claimed the lives of thousands. Earlier this month, the United Nations Human Rights Council adopted a crucial resolution to hold Duterte's administration responsible for mass violations of human rights. Here in the United States, the Filipino-American diaspora has held weeks of protests in cities around the nation aimed at Duterte and his broader extremist agenda. We turn now to Beverly Longyed. She is the global coordinator of the International Indigenous Peoples Movement for Self-Determination and Liberation, co-chair of the CSO Partnership for Development Effectiveness, and also a member of the Philippines Universal Periodic Review Watch. She was a central witness in advocating, alongside Amnesty International, for the passage of the UN Human Rights Council resolution. Welcome to the program, Beverly.
Thank you, Sonali, for inviting me in this opportunity, and hello to all of our listeners and viewers.
So, Beverly, you are in Washington, D.C., where I understand you're basically meeting with lawmakers. You are trying to raise the profile of what's happening in the Philippines. Can you summarize for us what Duterte's rule has been, the impact it's had on the Philippines in a nutshell? What's your, you know, 1 minute or 2 minute pitch to members of the U.S. Congress about why Duterte is dangerous?
Well, one, because despite his campaign commitments when he ran for president, he's doing the opposite. What we see now is an intensified attack on people's rights, civil and political, economic and social, cultural rights. So we hear of the killings related to drugs, but beyond the killings of drug-related killings, there are various human rights violations happening in different parts of the country, especially among indigenous peoples.
And you are an indigenous Filipino yourself, right? And have been advocating on behalf of indigenous communities. Specifically, how has he attacked indigenous communities in the Philippines?
Well, yes, I am indigenous myself. I am Igorot. I'm a full-blooded Igorot belonging to the Bontoc and Kankanai peoples. The attacks has been relentless because we have been facing an intensified intrusion into our ancestral lands and territories because of the government's build policy that would bring in destructive projects like mining and corporate energy projects and plantations. Alongside its build economic policy, it's his political policy of kill people who are resisting, dissenting, or critical to his policies and programs.
I understand that one of the aspects of his rule in the Philippines that people have been protesting is a tax reform law that's sort of broadly referred to as the train law. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it's basically a new tax law wherein he increases the taxation on supposedly certain products that are valuable, that are largely used for the production of food, like sugar and all of this. And this has resulted to an increase of prices in the Philippines. And at the same time, exempting high income earners from income tax. So you see a higher tax for basic food products, but lesser tax or exemption for people who have higher income tax. So it's favoring more the poor, favoring more the rich rather than the poor, and at the same time introducing liberalization of investments wherein foreign corporations are given tax holidays, especially mining companies.
So it's a regressive tax, as we would say.
Yes, I think so. That's the term.
Yeah. So how important was the UN Human Rights Council's resolution that I understand you were a witness that helped to get this resolution passed?
One, the passage of the UN Human Rights Council resolution was a concerted effort of various stakeholders, especially the victims. And of course, we've also had states that have been champions for human rights. And this is led by the state of Iceland. And of course, other civil society organizations like, as you mentioned, Amnesty International and other civil society groups. So what we saw here is an example of good cooperation among different stakeholders for the promotion and protection of human rights. This is a very, very welcome development. It's probably the first of several steps that we will have to undertake to give, one, to expose the real situation of human rights in the Philippines, two, to provide the needed relief probably from victims and their families who have been victims of extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, threat, harassment, intimidation. And third, it's a very necessary mechanism wherein we are able to have an opportunity to show what's really happening in the Philippines because of a very strong opposition to the resolution. Second, because of the influx of what you would say fake news, false news that's also being propagated by government.
I understand that the death toll directly from his so-called drug war is at nearly 30,000 deaths. The police, the Philippines police, have actually just openly admitted to killing 6,600 people as part of their anti-drug operations. So they see these killings as perfectly legal, even though, of course, this is a small percentage of the killings, but even 6,600 killings, I would be hard-pressed to come up with any other government in the world today that would admit its police force had killed 6,600 people as a matter of routine operations for drug crimes or so-called drug crimes.
You know, Sonali, it has always been our opinion like one killing is one killing too many, especially if it's done in the context of violating basic human rights of due process of law. And what you see of government admitting of killing 6,000, it's because of the impunity that reigns wherein not a single perpetrator is brought to justice, therefore the brazenness to openly admit without even fear of repercussion. So that's the kind of climate that prevails in the country. Second, it also speaks of the danger, no? That human rights defenders or activists or anybody who's critical of the Philippine government, that you can just suddenly find yourself in a situation where you're just arrested, incarcerated, or probably dead. And then it gets to be justified because what you're doing is an act of terrorism. So all of this would speak of how government operates to destroy the credibility of organizations, leaders, and communities, and at the same time, undermine the legitimacy and justness of people's struggles for against destructive projects, for better wages, better jobs, for the right to education, for the freedom to be able to express yourself without fear.
And I understand that the drug war in particular targets the poorest in the Philippines, and in particular young people and children, so much so that Human Rights Watch says that children are afraid of going to school, especially and suffer deep psychological trauma when they've witnessed others being killed. It sounds Incredibly horrific. So what about the recently passed capital punishment, the death penalty that Duterte has brought back to the Philippines? Is that part of his ongoing agenda to ensure that he can basically conduct extrajudicial killings?
Well, I think what we have now is a the president trying to revive different policies.
And I should clarify, laws. He hasn't actually brought it back. He's trying to bring it back.
Yes, yeah. Trying to bring it back. What we is trying to bring back draconian measures that people have resisted in the past, that people in their mass movement were able to either amend, repeal, or remove in its totality. What we have here would be, while he's able to do this extrajudicially, he's now trying to come out with laws that would justify killings in a manner speaking legally allowed. And in a situation wherein you have a judicial system that doesn't have that has a very bad record of due process of law, equal protection of the law, that the death penalty will be more serve as a tool for further violating people's rights rather than a deterrent for people's safety and security.
Now, what about the U.S. Congress? Here in the United States, you're in Washington, D.C. right now. What sort of response have you had among members of the U.S. Congress in investigating the human rights situation under Duterte? Because, of course, the Philippines is a very strong and historic U.S. ally. There are strong military ties and economic ties between the two nations.
Well, I think so far with the meetings that we've had since Monday, we've had, I would say, a general concern among the members of Congress that we have spoken so far. And I think the concern is much great because now we have the Subcommittee on Asia, Pacific and Non-Proliferation agreeing to hold a hearing on Thursday to look on the among other things, the human rights situation in the Philippines, including the human rights situation in Vietnam and Cambodia.
So how important has it been for the protests in cities around the country to call attention to what's happening in the Philippines? There has been a very, very enthusiastic showing in many, many different cities led by an organization, the U.S. Movement Against Killings and Dictatorship and for Democracy in the Philippines, or MALEA, which is Filipino for Free. Tell us a little bit about these protests that have been happening.
Actually, the protests has not only been in the U.S. or in the Philippines, but it has been happening in key countries around the world, like in Canada, in Hong Kong, in Australia, and in New Zealand. So wherein you also have the participation not only of Filipinos, but also advocate for the rights of Filipinos in these countries. These actions have been very important to bring into light the real stories that have been happening, that are happening in the Philippines. It brings into light these violations. It brings into light what are the policies and projects of Duterte that are negatively impacting on people's lives, contrary to government propaganda, contrary to government news, contrary to any government pronouncement.
What did Duterte say during his State of the Nation address? He was facing mass protests in the Philippines as he gave this address and, of course, around the world, as we just mentioned. That State of the Nation address was a good focal point for critics of his human rights record. Did he in any way admit any culpability or even soften his tone?
I don't think so. In fact, what we have seen, one thing that has been also been glaring in his State of the Nation address was his misogynist character, his misogynist nature. And you would practically see the president of the Philippines pimping out Filipinos when he invited, like, come on, advising men like Boracay already has been rehabilitated and women are waiting for you.
Wow.
I mean, that's, and despite the condemnation in his previous testimonies. So that's the kind of president that we have. No remorse. And he thinks that he can just simply say anything and get away with it. And that's where the importance of the Human Rights Council is. And of course, the congressional hearings that we're going to have on Thursday here in D.C.
Right. So these congressional hearings, which, you know, they come a day after the very high profile special counsel hearings featuring Robert Mueller. At least they weren't on the same day because, of course, there's everything else has sort of taken a backseat to it. What sort of opposition is there within the Philippines establishment, government or military establishment against Duterte? Is there any opposition that could challenge him? I understand that just a few days ago, one opposition party, including the country's vice president, was charged with sedition for reportedly plotting to oust Duterte.
Well, I think the latest State of the Nation address a few days two days ago, would be an example of different political forces coming together. So it's not only the so-called left or the militants who were there, but it included a wider range of people having different political beliefs. We think that this is also a growing testimony of the growing discontent, disappointment, and protest towards the Philippine towards President Duterte.
I understand that there, as part of the attacks on human rights activists and also the truth, there are attacks against journalists in the Philippines as well.
Journalists, but even other professionals like lawyers, just less than 24 hours ago, we had I just received a few hours ago news that one of our human rights advocate, a lawyer, has been shot dead, and this adds to the growing list of simply advocates, no? Of human rights. And then before I came here to the United States, it's just another indigenous leader has been killed, and he has been very, very militant about defending ancestral lands in his territories in Mindanao.
Does Duterte have the ability to remain in power legally? You know, I understand that the next election is not till 2022. Will he be able to run for re-election, or will that be the extent of his presidency?
Well, supposedly that ends his term, but there are moves in both houses of Congress to change the constitution, wherein one of the provisions that they would like to remove will be the provision on term limits. Therefore, you would have a president or probably a senator, a congressman, or a local authority being in office beyond the term defined by law. And this is why in the last election, it was very important to Duterte to get a control of the local authorities, the executive officers, and at the same time being able to control parliament, so that his agenda of charter change or constitutional change would pass through. Mm-hmm. And I think this is also the reason why they filed charges of sedition against the vice president, so that with the vice president out and being able to control who the speaker of the Senate and the House, they can be able to control the entire executive department by putting in the speaker of the Senate as the vice president, if they succeed in having the current vice president thrown out of position.
Right. And so do you hope for any prospects for a mass movement nationwide to force his resignation? I mean, we see that in many countries, here in the United States, in Puerto Rico, there have been a mass movement calling for the resignation of their governor. And we see, you know, mass movements in country after country, territory after territory, demanding resignations of dictatorial leaders, and clearly he's unpopular now, even though he was elected with a broad mandate. I suppose people are seeing his true face. Do you have any hope that a mass movement could force him to resign?
Of course. I mean, we were able, the people's movement was able to kick out the Marcos dictator. We were able to kick out Gloria Macapagal Arroyo and Estrada. And what would prevent the Filipino people from doing it this time around against a fascist, a person who has been selling out our sovereignty, and a macho and misogynist president?
Do you hope for people to contact their members of Congress here in the United States to urge an inquiry, a hearing, or any sort of action around the Philippines, given that the U.S. does have some leverage?
Yes. It would be very, very helpful of the constituencies in district can call their district representative, their congressman, to for them to support the investigation that will happen on Thursday in relation to checking in where does U.S. aid, where does U.S. taxpayers go to the Philippines, and to make sure that not a single cent goes to military operations or police operations that will result to extrajudicial killings, unwarranted arrests, unwarranted incarceration, enforced disappearances, or threat, harassment, and intimidation. Surely, we the Filipino people will be very thankful to you if you're able to do this. And then I think there's also an opportunity for us to be able to watch the public hearings that will happen on Thursday.
And I understand that malayamovement.com is a good website for people to get details?
Yes, please. Please do.
That's Malaya Movement, M-A-L-A-Y-A, movement.com. Mm-hmm. Beverly, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali, and thank you very much for listening and watching.
My guest has been Beverly Longyid, Global Coordinator of the International Indigenous Peoples Movement for Self-Determination and Liberation. She was a key witness in advocating alongside Amnesty International for the recent passage of the UN Human Rights Council resolution calling for an investigation into the killings in the Philippines. I'm Sonali Kulhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.